This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Alex Halpern. You may know him as the angriest librarian who went on a Twitter rant that went viral worldwide defending libraries. You can find him on Twitter at HalpernAlex, and he is a library school student in Oregon. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from listeners like you. Alex, welcome to Circulating Ideas.
Lovely to be here.
So before we get into a lot of real more deeper subjects, I wanted to know what I've asked this of a lot of guests recently, and that's got everybody has the kind of their own path. What led you to librarianship in the first place when you were thinking about what you wanted to do for a living? How did you settle on librarianship?
Well, you know, my mom was a librarian. She just retired after 40 years and they named her library after her, which was a very, very cool thing. And the whole family came down and we surprised her, and it was great. But so I've always been around libraries. I kind of grew up in libraries. And then when I was older, I was a writer, and I started working in information and referral for social services and public health. And I've been doing that for almost 13 years. But I got tired of kind of being behind the computer, and I wanted to get out and help people directly. And I saw a lot of opportunity in kind of the merging of libraries, and particularly public libraries and social service referral, as libraries kind of become more community centers. So I thought I could bring my skills into a world that I've always loved and kind of go from there.
And we're going to get into that a little bit more, but I do want to hit on why a lot of people know who you are already. Can you talk about, before we get to the whatever date that was, October of last year, the viral tweets you sent out, how did you get involved with kind of Twitter in the first place, and what kind of drew you to that?
So I joined Twitter late. I joined Twitter in like 2013, and mostly because I'm Ukrainian and I was following the war in Ukraine. So that was really why I initially joined Twitter. And then I kind of found communities on Twitter and got addicted to it, as people do, especially like the writing community and then the library community. But that was how I first got onto Twitter. And before I blew up with my crazy tweet, I had about like 4,000 followers. I had a pretty good, you know, like follower ratio. I was enjoying myself. And then kind of overnight, everything exploded on me.
So let's talk about the explosion. There was a, I guess it was in a New York paper, but it's a British writer. Just tweeted out some ignorant thing about all libraries should close and they should just give all those books to the schools or something like that. And
that is exactly what he said. And people, you know, rightfully piled on him right away. But I really didn't intend for it to go crazy. Like I said, I didn't have, like, I only had a couple thousand followers, but somebody had retweeted it into my feed. And so I quoted it and decided I would go on a little rant, mostly just for the people who already follow me. And I guess it resonated with people. Partly, I mean, I do think it resonated with people because people saw, oh, librarian saying motherfucker, you know, like that's unusual. So people were surprised and interested. And I also think that it's so obvious a cause that to be for, that it was so preposterous that it was very easy for people to rally to, if that makes sense.
Right. And well, it's particularly preposterous in the UK because they're worse at closing libraries than we are in the US.
So. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I live in Oregon, where we just closed, the Douglas County in Southern Oregon just closed their entire library district.
Oh, yeah. I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
They voted to take away the funding. And I think that another year from now, they're going to vote to restore the funding because, you know, who uses public libraries, especially in rural communities like Douglas County? It's people who vote.
Right.
So I think that's going to change pretty quick.
And that kind of thing comes off as where we kind of get into mistakes sometimes, I think, of trying to over-categorize an area because you think, oh, Oregon, that's just a bunch of liberal hippies up there and stuff. But, like, they're people closing libraries.
So. Oh, no. I mean, outside the Portland metro, Oregon is not a kind of liberal bastion. It's It's very, you get very, the further east and south you go, it gets very, very conservative very quickly. Oregon only has about 5 million people, and about 2.5 million of them live in the Portland metro. So it's very spread out and very rural, and it tends to get very conservative very quickly. I grew up in San Francisco, and my wife and I lived there for a long time. And now, kind of moving to a more rural area, it's been a major culture shock for both of us.
And what led you to move to Oregon?
Most of my family's here. My mom grew up here, so my sister and her kids are here, and all my aunts and uncles and cousins. We have a very close, very large family. There's like 30 of us. So basically, only my parents are still in California, and we were the other last holdout. So, and you know what? We couldn't afford to buy a house in San Francisco. So,
Yeah, well, that's something.
yeah. Once we had a kid, it was kind of a no-brainer. Like our flat in San Francisco was about the size of our living room here in Oregon, and we paid more for it. So.
Well, let's go back a little bit to the Twitter rant. Why every once in a while there's somebody that comes out of the blue and it might be famous in some way, some kind of writer or something that we are not aware of, and they make some ignorant comment about libraries. And I always wonder how much of that libraries need to do a lot more of. I mean, it's ignorant to say something like that, but do we need to do a better job of getting out the word about what we're doing that we're not just these book warehouses anymore? Do you think that's the responsibility of libraries?
I think it should be, and I think that libraries are starting to make an effort to do that. I follow a number of libraries who also follow me on Twitter, and their engagement is impressive, and they're tweeting interesting things and interacting with people, and I think that's important. But I would say the vast majority of people don't have any idea how much libraries are changing. I think this new Emilio Estevez movie, The Public, may do a good job of helping kind of change can. Like traditional attitudes about libraries or traditional opinions about libraries. But it is changing fast. And the people who use libraries know that. But too many people don't use libraries. So.
Yeah, you know, and I run into that all the time with just regular patrons that are in my library that they don't necessarily know. I can tell somebody who's been coming to the library for 30 years, did you know we have ebooks? They're like, what?
Yeah,
And
exactly.
we're still working with the people who even love us already, so.
Yeah. So, and I think. And we'll get into this later, as you said, but another thing about kind of library outreach is that libraries are now a big, especially in big cities, a first point of contact for kind of underserved and marginalized populations. You see that in Portland, and you see it in San Francisco tremendously. The homeless population using the library as a resource because it's the resource they have. And the more people I think that we can let know that we can help them, the better.
Right. And so let's get into that a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing right now as in your job?
So I'm actually the research director for a group called the Network of Care, and we are a online resource and referral platform. And so we run kind of a private library of social service and public health resources, and people come to us to get help. And so we contract with state and local governments and build these platforms for people to kind of get the help that they need. And one of the things I'm interested in doing kind of in my library career is working with libraries to improve resource and referral training for librarians so that when people come to the library, there's someone who can help them and point them in the right direction. And I don't want people to think that I want to completely change kind of what libraries are, but libraries are changing themselves. And
Right.
I think that library staff should be better prepared to meet that challenge.
Yeah, well, because a lot of times we don't necessarily know what to do because you don't. I mean, it's start, some of the library schools now are starting to do that of training this kind of thing. But when I went to library school, mumble, mumble, mumble years ago, we didn't talk about what to do if there's a homeless patron in your library or what to do if there's someone who's in obvious mental distress. What do you do besides when they're making a disruption, then you deal with it like that, but that's not really what we want to do. We want to be able to have the tools at hand to refer, because we don't want to necessarily be the person who takes care of the problem and it helps them work through the problem because we're not social workers in general, but we need to
Right.
know how to refer to the proper person who can help this person out who needs help.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it's still not talked enough about in library school. I think it's been talked about quite a bit at my library school, but mostly because I'm the one bringing it up. But no, it really it's not about becoming social workers, though there are libraries now, San Francisco Public, Portland, DC, Chicago, mostly the bigger cities that are hiring social workers to work in the library. And they are full-time library employees or they're contracted employees from another organization that are working full-time doing social work in the library. And I think that is a huge step forward. But rural and suburban libraries are rarely going to have the budget to do that. So I think the improvements can be made in giving some training to library staff and then developing relationships with local agencies, of which there are always a ton, that are underutilized.
Can you give some examples of some local agencies that libraries can be if they're looking if they want to be doing this, and like what kinds of things should they be looking for?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to start with, the Department of Social Services or Department of Human Services in any county is going to have resources. And often there is no communication between them and the library. All, especially in the libraries that I've come across, most of the interaction when someone in distress comes in a library is call the police, and the police will handle it. And I don't think that's healthy for anybody. Libraries, I think, are one of the last places that people trust when it comes to the government. And it's very, very easy to breach that trust if the first thing you do is, well, let's call the police, they can handle it. So no, Department of Social Services, there's always nonprofits around. It's kind of community dependent, but there are always social service and community action and public health groups who would be jumping at the bit to partner with the library. And I think we should see more of that.
Right. My wife works in public health, and so I know there's everywhere there's some kind of public health department or something that you can speak with. So.
Exactly. And every community has a community action agency for helping people who are lower income. And most communities have some sort of homeless action group. There are resources. And this is what I found in my current job. There are so many resources out there, and they are so underutilized because people don't know about them. And if they do know about them, they are afraid to use them. It kind of goes into the whole idea of library anxiety, where people are hesitant to talk to librarians about questions they might have. That is tenfold in the social services community.
Right, and it's a shame because we're all kind of trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to help our communities. We just need to work together to be a deeper part of our communities and actually speak with each other and know what's going on.
Exactly. Developing relationships between agencies, I think, is the biggest thing libraries could do. Even if librarians and library staff are not getting extra training, just knowing that you can pick up the phone and call, Jane over at the Department of Social Services makes a big difference.
Right, and I think that's where you can also help by getting involved. Like librarians can get involved in their community, even if you're not just calling up the health department and saying, "Hey, can we have a partnership?" But you're both part of what the Rotary Club or the Lions Club or the whatever kind of like you're involved in your
Absolutely.
community. You're not just, "Well, I'm here as a representative of the library," but you are part of your community.
Absolutely. And I think, I think it can't be overstated how important like community engagement is and viewing yourself as more than just somebody who lives somewhere, but as somebody who wants to actually like, actively participate in your community. Like you may not, if you're a librarian or a library staff, you may not work at the library in your community. But you could try to join that board. You could be active in the Friends. Like I think it's very important to kind of focus not just on your job, but on the community as well.
Right, I know a lot of librarians actually that do that, that they work somewhere else besides where they live, but where they live, they join the library board, and so they can give that experience of library work without really having sort of a conflict of interest of running your own library's board, so.
I went to a board meeting for our local library a couple weeks ago, and several members of the board are librarians in other kind of neighboring cities, but they all live here, and so they all want to contribute to the library community, which I think is awesome and very important.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things that, we even if people don't necessarily understand what we do, we still get, that 95% approval rating in Pew reports and things like that. So, I mean,
People love the library. They just either don't use them or don't understand them.
right. And then every once in a while you
And
get a ignorant moron.
well, yeah, I mean, of course, and there is But that's, I mean, that again, I think that's why kind of my message resonated so widely, was because that's so rare and everybody looks at it as like, how could you not like the library? Like, the library is this thing you get to go do for free with all this awesome stuff. And even if you think it's just a place for books, hey, free books.
Right. Because you know, I'm always of a, I want to expand people's mindset of what the library can be, but we are still that, we're like, we are what we were, but we're just more than that now. So it's not,
exactly.
I never like to say we're not just books, because I don't want to downgrade books, because books are still a very important part of what we are, but we are books plus so many other things.
Yeah. I mean, the internet has, people think the internet has made libraries obsolete. And I think the internet has made libraries far more dynamic and far more capable. Because people tend to look both at the library and the world through their own point of view, obviously, and have no idea often that there is another subset of America that does not have the resources that they have.
Right.
You know, and I'm guilty of this too, even though I work in this profession, but there are people who go to use a library because they don't have internet at home, and that's not an option. They go to the library to apply for jobs, to get tax forms, to do, you know, 100 different things that it would never occur to somebody who has a middle-class income to need to do. And there are communities in which the poverty rate is astounding and would amaze anybody who's not aware of it. I mean, which is most people, but it, like Clackamas County, where I live, like there's several thousand homeless school kids. I mean, and this is a relatively well-to-do suburb of Portland, which is a pretty prosperous city. So this is a major national problem that we just don't think about, and we try to sweep under the rug, and that libraries really can be on the front lines of fighting.
Right, because you talked about that a little bit, that libraries are one of those gathering places for people, a free gathering place, a public place that people can come together.
It's pretty much the last one. I mean, parks, but it's really the last indoor space that's provided by the public that anybody can go to. And I mean, I like, libraries are egalitarian. That's the word I like. You could be the richest person in America. You could be the poorest person in America. You're both welcome at the library.
Right.
You could be the guy from Twitter who hates libraries. And you know what? I will still welcome you to the library. I might give you a side eye, but you know, you're still welcome to come to the library no matter how much you hate it, and check out whatever books you want. And I think that is something that I wish we could replicate at every level of government.
Yeah, I mean, because I've even said that to people. Luckily, it's been fairly rare, but if someone who has had been enough of a disruption that we've had to put them like on a month suspension or something like that, because
sure,
some people are like that. But I always, if I get to speak to them, I will say, we will welcome you back to the library after this suspension time is complete. We want you back. You have to follow the rules, and you cannot disrupt in this. Obviously, that has to be a huge thing.
Well, sure. Like that. Yeah.
But you know, after that's done, your time served. Come on back, and we'll get you what you need. So.
It's so important to let people, especially people that have, you know, mental illnesses or homeless, to let them know that there is a place that they can go. You know, somebody who's mentally ill might have some sort of problem in the library, as you said, and act out and be banned, but they can always come back because this is the place for them. And I think there are a lot of libraries, especially kind of bigger city libraries where there are large homeless populations, have taken, I don't want to say I've gone to lengths, but have made efforts to make things less palatable for homeless patrons.
Yes.
You know, instituting library bathroom rules and seating rules, and frankly, I just think that is abhorrent. I think there are so much better ways to go about it, and I understand that there are inherent problems that come with working with those populations, but that doesn't mean the answer is to say, well, you can't come here. This is the place where we should say you can come here.
Right. I feel like it's almost us being passive aggressive about it almost. It's like, well, if we just, they're just not here, then we have to deal with them.
That's exactly what it is.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, you see that
replicated everywhere. It's a smaller scale version of the spikes in the big cities of where homeless people can't sleep there because there's spikes on there, or there's extra railings on the benches. And
That's exactly what I thought of when we first started talking about this, was the spikes on the benches. I just, to me, I just can't imagine the mindset of somebody who thinks, hey, you know what we should do? You know what would solve this homeless problem? If we put spikes on the places they sleep so they can't sleep there. So now they just have to go somewhere else and they're not our problem. But I mean, we live in an imperfect world, and so I think the best answer to that is to try to find a balance, and kind of meet somewhere in the middle. And I think the library is the perfect place to do that.
And do you think, is this something, did you say you think that library schools are dealing with this, or they're not really dealing with this issue yet?
I don't think that. I mean, it's certainly not a focus. I mean, library school is mostly, as I'm sure you remember, is mostly about theory and kind of get most of the practical experience kind of when you're on the ground working in a library. We talk about it some. I think at my library school, we talk about it more simply because I can't stop talking about it. But I think it's something that should be talked about as much as possible. I was think I'm not going to be able to go to ALA this year. I was hoping that I would, but next year I think I'm going to try to pitch a panel on social service and public health training. And it's something that I've talked about with one of my coworkers who is she was the pres she actually no she is now the president of the Oakland, California Friends of the Library, and she was on the Oakland Library Commission, but she termed out. But we she and I have worked together for almost 13 years, and we've joked about 10 years down the road starting a consulting business to teach library staff how to do better social service referral and training. But it's kind of a need that needs to be filled.
Yeah, my library is pretty good at that, doing that kind of training. But I was going to say, I think a kind of consulting firm that specialized in that actually would be very helpful. I don't think that would be a whole industry where you could have tons of consultants
No,
doing that. But I mean,
no,
certainly
no.
one or two, three people who would travel around the country doing that kind of training. That's very much the kind of work that libraries are needing to do now. So I think it would be successful. So.
I think so. I mean, the issue really is that most suburban and rural libraries just don't have the funding, and that's why
Right.
their staff are not getting trained, and that's why they're not able to do these things. Because when they do get money, it's immediately earmarked for stuff, and that's understandable. But outside the bigger kind of wealthier communities, libraries are struggling, and they're used, and that's really the most frustrating thing. But if you're a county official or a city official and you need to cut your budget by X amount, you look at your line item. Are you going to cut the police? No. Are you going to cut the fire department? No. Can you cut the library? Oh, you can cut the library.
Right.
And it really doesn't take into account kind of all the things that the libraries do for the community, and that is enormously frustrating to me.
Well, and some of it honestly is because I think they're not thinking. I think that's somewhat of a failure of the library as well to explain better to their
Oh, I think that's true too. I
fundraisers, because
agree.
some of it I think they're just like, okay, we'll tell them not to buy books for a couple of years, and then we'll buy books again starting 3 years later, and they think that's going to solve anything. When I mean, materials is a good part of our budget, but that's not a lot of what we do.
No, exactly. And who's to say that 3 years from now they're not going to still have a budget crisis or have a different budget crisis? That's budget crises are, the life's blood of local government.
Right. I mean,
So you have to look.
we're all still digging out of 10 years ago
No,
financial
absolutely.
crisis, so.
And I also think that libraries absolutely, not every library, but for the most part, absolutely do not take advantage of the grant money that's out there.
Right,
There
right.
is a ton of grant and foundational money that libraries could be applying for, but don't because they don't have grant writing expertise. And I think grant writing should be a class in library school.
Absolutely.
And I think the library should focus at least, I mean, again, this comes down to stretched staffs and stretched budgets, but if you could set aside time for one of your employees to become a grant writing employee, it will pay dividends. And I mean, I have experience, like I've done a lot of grant writing in the past, and so I'm more aware kind of what's out there, but I think a lot of people are not. And man, there is a ton of money out there to be had if you go looking for it.
We've kind of danced around this subject a little bit, and I wanted to get your opinion. What else do you think could use some improvement in library schools these days? What is not being focused on that you think needs to be focused on, other than what we've already kind of discussed?
Well, I graduate in August, so I don't want to get too negative.
We'll check back in another year. And
no, I think that I've really enjoyed my time in library school, but I think that there is kind of an overemphasis on theory and less on practice, and I think that's an issue. I think we're moving past the just teaching, circulation and reference, though reference I think could also use kind of an updating and into being more than just how to find a book. But I actually think that my library school, I'm in the Portland cohort of Emporia State, which is the only library school in Oregon, but I think they've done a very good job. They are my advisor's great, and the professors have for the most part been good. And you kind of run into some of the challenges that you run into in any distance learning program, but there's such a nice kind of close-knit library community here in Portland that it's like most, as I said, it's the only library school in Oregon. So we have people come in and talk to our class all the time because just about every librarian in the Portland metro area went to our school. So there's a great network. And yeah, I think library schools kind of just, and I know a lot of them are making the switch to calling themselves iSchools and emphasizing the informational aspect of the MIS. And I think that might not necessarily
Boo,
be,
boo.
yeah, that's, I think that might not be the best direction to go. And I understand why libraries are, why universities are doing that, because they want to appeal to students and they want to kind of sound with the times. But most of those students are going to go into libraries. And I think that libraries should continue to be the focus because libraries are going to outlast whatever the current technology is they're teaching in the iSchool, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, and I think, I mean, and I think, again, going back to that thing that everybody loves libraries, people understand what library means. That's a positive thing. Why are we abandoning a very positive thing?
Exactly. I don't know. I wish I did. But like I look at, you look at Illinois, you look at Indiana, the big schools that
Right.
now are I schools instead of library schools. And I just think, what a missed opportunity to be getting kick-ass librarians by saying, hey, come here and become a kick-ass librarian.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think it was a good idea for them to add the information to it. Like, I like
Oh,
a Bachelor of
absolutely.
Library and Information Science. That's great, but it should be both.
Yeah, it should be both, and I feel like libraries should be emphasized. There are other ways to get an information degree. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we're in agreement on this, but I find it frustrating, and kind of meaningless and unnecessary. Thankfully, my school has not done that, so I'm not burning any bridges.
Right. Well, I have one other topic I want to get to, but then I want to ask one other thing that just to get us in a little bit more trouble before we do
Absolutely.
this.
I love getting in trouble. I've already, gotten famous for swearing and doing things like that on the internet before I've gotten my library degree. I really timed that well.
You're supposed to get established first, and then
Yeah, because I know instead what I did was peak in my library career before I became an official librarian. Yeah, that was really smart on my part.
But I was gonna. What's your opinion on this whole thing of the executive director of ALA having a MLIS?
I mean, part of me is biased because I'm about to get mine. So I'm like, well, of course the director should have an MIS. Like, if I'm going to be the director, I want to knock out some of that competition. But I think, as I said before, I'm more of an egalitarian. And I kind of think it should be open to everybody. I think that there needs to be some sort of criteria involved in terms of has this person been an active member of the library community and working in libraries for a long time? Of course. I don't want to see ALA go searching for professional lobbyists to be the president.
Right.
But at the same time, I see the other argument, which is that this is a professional degree, this is a profession, and in order to lead the profession, we should need to have somebody of the profession. And so I understand that argument that having a degreed librarian at the top makes sense. So I honestly am split on it, and I see both sides to it, though I am more of the let's kind of move past our antiquated ideas of what constitutes what. I mean, I am the guy who called himself the angriest librarian for a while, and I'm not yet a librarian, which, surprisingly enough, only a couple people called me out on. And I'm very quick to admit it and say, no, I'm not yet a librarian. I'm a library student. I'm a professional working in the information world, but only a couple people have been like, hey, you're not a librarian. And to that, I say, sure, I'm not.
Well, see, I'm not a snob like that. I think you're a librarian fine. I think anybody comes into any of my staff who wants to call themselves a librarian, I don't give a crap. I'm not.
Right, exactly.
Early on when I was in my career, I was like, oh yeah, capital L librarian because I have a master's degree. Like, this, whatever. And
Yeah,
also,
no, I am more of that mind as well.
yeah, and the thing about the executive director thing that it drives me a little nuts is that I know too many librarians in the field who don't have their MLS. Who are really good librarians, and so that I almost
Oh
have to
yeah.
leave it as a MLIS preferred rather than required.
I mean, in my cohort in library school, there are a dozen library employees who are in their 50s or 60s who have been working at libraries for 30 years and are now getting the degree so that they can get the pay raise that they deserve. Who have been, library paraprofessionals for 30 years and know more about libraries than anybody, but aren't getting the money they deserve because they don't have the degree.
Well, we've kind of led it back to you mentioned it, so I wanted to talk a little bit more about Twitter.
Yes.
Number one, why would you? Why do you? Now you just have your name on your Twitter account, but back
Yes.
then, as every article liked to say, this guy who calls himself the angriest librarian, blah 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 blah.
Okay,
Why
so
were you the
honestly,
angriest librarian?
so honestly, I was pissed at the guy. And so, and then it started getting really popular and people started retweeting a lot and I was like, "Oh, you know what? I bet I could make this go even more viral if I like call myself the angriest librarian." And this was very early on and I was like, "It worked." And then I was like, "Oh, it worked."
Oh wait, were you hashtag branding?
I was hashtag branding. And then when it worked too well, I was like, "Oh, maybe I should not have done that." But I did it. But so I then I slowly moved my
I've
name
made a
back.
huge mistake.
So I was the angriest librarian for a couple of weeks, and then I was Alex Halpern, comma, the angriest librarian. And now I'm back. And in my bio, I put I was the angriest librarian because Twitter's silly.
It's very silly.
But I do love it, and I do love the library community on there, especially. And I told her I would give her a shout out. Librarians to follow, Kristen Arnett. Follow Kristen Arnett on Twitter. She is one of the funniest, best librarians and writers out there.
Did she
You're
pay you
welcome.
for that, or
You're welcome, Kristen.
did she pay you for that?
She should have.
I mean, I just want a cut if she did. So. Well, I mean, what is it about Twitter that you think? I mean, does it give you like the larger community that you're looking for in librarianship? I know you follow like most people. I think I said something about that the other day that like Twitter is a bunch of Venn diagrams and we all kind of cross over in different ways because I have my tech Twitter that I like to follow. I have my Hollywood gossipy Twitter. I have my library Twitter. I have a very small number of just personal friends from my real life on there too. So I mean, it's kind of everything kind of crosses over, but in the library sense, what does Twitter bring for you?
I think that in a library sense, it's really allowed me kind of to network and meet people that I never would have, like doing things like this interview. I mean, after my thing went viral, I did a video interview with the Washington Post. I got to write an article in The Atlantic about the future of libraries, and those are all opportunities I would not have had if it wasn't for Twitter. And I get to meet, cool people. I met people at ALA last summer that I only knew through Twitter. And I think it's just a great way to kind of meet people and get a better idea of who they are than through kind of any other online medium, because people tend to be a little more honest on Twitter, I think. But it's also, it's a time waster, and it's also addictive. It's got You get that hit of dopamine when somebody, likes or retweets you, and I think that certainly applies to me. But yeah, no, I mean, I just had another tweet go huge yesterday, and it's always funny to see what people like. Like this was just about was a political tweet. And, you know, and again, here I am talking about, you know, my future library career, but I'm still doing stupid things on Twitter, like making funny political tweets when who knows who I want to hire me. So I don't know. I'm too old. I'm too old to care about that stuff anymore.
Yeah, I make tons of stupid tweets. Don't worry about it.
That's, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm 35 years old. I've got, you know, a family. I've been working in the same job for almost 13 years. My entire adult life, I've worked kind of in this world, and I'm pretty well established professionally. And I'm ready to make the switch over into libraries, but I'm not ready to kind of. I don't need to hide who I am now. I'm not 24 trying to, you know, hide my Facebook account. I'm not doing anything, you know.
Well, is anything making you angry right now, Alex?
Oh, man. Well,
take politics out of it.
I was going to say.
In the library world, is anything making you angry right now? And let's forget that.
Yeah,
and no Batman movies either. So.
I have to write a paper this weekend.
That makes you mad.
That's really. No, honestly. And somebody said to me the other day, because I tweeted something about, you know, about my son, and he was being cute. And somebody was like, "Well, you really don't seem like the angriest librarian." And I was like, "Well, you know, I've calmed down a little bit. Like, my kid's very cute. I have a nice life. Like, I'm trying not to be angry." And then every now and then, something will set me off. And, you know,
well,
I refuse to watch the State of the Union for the first time in my adult life.
Right. I mean, you're angry in comparison with librarians. So it's...
Exactly. And I'm very good at being angry, so that's kind of a fun shtick for me. But...
All right, well, Alex, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really much appreciate it. If people want to follow you more online, where should they go to do that?
They should follow me on Twitter at HalpernAlex.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Alex.
Thank you very much. This has been great.
Great. Bye.
Bye.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta with support from listeners like you. Find out how you can help by going to circulatingideas.com and clicking on support. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And help others find the show by leaving a rating or review. You can follow the show on Twitter at CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening and keep circulating your ideas. That'll be great if we're both clearing our throats the whole time. So.